The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
Ursula Edgington is back on the program here at RCR, an adult educator. She's been in New Zealand for 10 years. She's become increasingly aware of the restrictions placed on academic freedoms and the conflicts of interest that prevent open debate. She writes at Informed Heart on Substack. And Ursula Edgington was with us, at the end of August, so 2.5 weeks ago, let's say, talking about MedSafe's mysterious and shocking staff absence levels since the jab rollout. And I think we also touched on Auckland University's research on vaccinated pregnant women. Like I say, for more from Ursula, go to informedheart.substack.com. And Ursula is back with us to talk about research he's been doing into the use of nudging by New Zealand corporations during COVID and the Internet of Animals. Dr. Ursula Edgington, welcome back to RCR. Thanks for coming on again.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here.
Okay, so what we're going to talk about this morning is some research you've been doing into using nudging by, as it turns out, New Zealand corporations during COVID. Stuff we didn't know about. And then I want to get on to the Internet of Animals. It's the first time I've heard that term.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And nudging of cows.
Oh, nudging
different
of cows.
Sort of nudging.
Cow nudging. Okay. So what is revealed in the latest rounds of OIAs that you've had back regarding nudging by New Zealand corporations? This sounds really interesting. What do you know?
Yes. Well, one of the marvellous things about doing the work that I do is having the privilege of speaking to lots of people who contact me with additional information from various sectors all over New Zealand and further afield. And this was one example of somebody who had unfortunately been mandated out of his job during the COVID era. And he drew my attention to an Official Information Act request that he'd put in, where in amongst the hundreds of pages, there was mentioned the pilot projects that five main companies in New Zealand had been involved with. And we didn't really know any details of these until they'd been mentioned in the minutes of this COVID senior management, COVID vaccination meeting, you know, that one of the government meetings. They had lots of working groups, didn't they? And this was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we delved into a bit of detail, and what we found was very revealing about what had been going on behind the scenes.
Okay. And well in advance of what eventually happened, right? That's the thing.
Yes, this is the interesting thing. So that was there was an expression of interest that went out from the government, Ministry of Health, asking for, you know, those big companies that would like to partake in this vaccination, in inverted commas, don't like to use that word, but they call it, that's what they call it. So that's what we have to call it sometimes. Mm. You know, the big push, basically. So this was in the run-up to that Super Saturday issue. So in the July, they put an expression of interest up, and 250 New Zealand companies applied for it. We don't know details at the moment of who those companies were. But we know that amongst those 250, the corporate giants of Fonterra, Main Freight, Warehouse Group, and Fisher & Paykel were chosen.
So they must have engaged to let it be known that they were interested in being part of this pilot program.
Exactly right. Yeah. So that was early July. So it's well before the mandates actually came into full fruition. Later that year, one of the problems, really, I suppose, from the employment law perspective, amongst many including the informed consent that wasn't provided, is the staff consultation. You know, they claimed that they put it out to staff consultation in the run-up to the end of the year, December 2021, that was. But, of course, it was in the July that they'd already been in cahoots, basically, with the government about promoting the jab internally, using all kinds of unethical nudges, psychological nudges, to encourage their staff to coerce them, basically, into getting the jabs.
Isn't that the definition of a conspiracy?
Yeah, conspiracy theories. That's right. It's another one that came true. That you know, we suspected that a lot of these corporate giants were in cahoots behind the scenes with government, and the way that they behaved would make us suspicious that they were. And now we've definitely got evidence that they were indeed in cahoots with the government.
Do we know if there are any incentives, and I'm thinking of financial incentives, available to these companies if they took part in this? Do we know that at all?
Yes. Very, very good question, Paul. That isn't something that's been revealed so far. But certainly it would have been in their interest, obviously, maybe not explicitly financially, but certainly in their interest to be supportive of government for various reasons of, you know, having governmental support. I mean, a lot of these companies are involved already in public-private partnerships with government funding, and, you know, they have spin-off so-called charities that benefit from being tax exempt. You know, a lot of the board members in Fonterra, for example, are also councillors with different hats on in different councils. So there's so many conflicts of interest involved in these, especially in these larger corporate companies, that it's, you know, it muddies the water in terms of where the incentives are and whether they're declared or not.
I guess if you have big name companies supporting what you're doing, that's part of the nudging process regarding the public and what they think. So obviously we could say that from the Ministry of Health and Government point of view, this was, I'm going to use the word, well, it's two words actually, this was part of the PSYOP.
Yeah, it definitely was, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, part of the criteria for being involved in this pilot project was that there was a minimum requirement of 70 staff members per day, I think it was, at each of these sites being available, you know, booking in advance. They knew that if people were, you know, were booking in, for instance, with their health and safety rep, that would give them another sort of, you know, comforting feeling that they were doing the right thing for their company and for the health and safety of their colleagues. So they would book themselves in to the vaccination, in inverted commas, site. They would take themselves along. They would get that time off. You know, that was an incentive for them. They would get that time off work. And if they happened, that was the other interesting thing, if they happened to have an adverse event, so-called rare adverse event that would make them, you know, unable to work for a short amount of time, then that wouldn't come out of their sick pay, their sick leave.
So there was adverse events. Adverse events were anticipated.
Yeah, it was already planned that not only would the staff be able to have time off to go and get their injections, but that also it was one of the findings at the end of the pilot project was that it was a positive thing that staff knew that if they did have an adverse event as a result of the injections, that they would be able to take time off without it affecting their sick leave.
But it was safe and effective.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And this was, I mean, the thing that we talked about the other week, Paul, about the unpaid leave for the MedSafe staff and the Department of Transport staff, you know, that, again, that raises more questions for me, because if I'm asking about sick leave and unpaid leave, now I'm asking myself, well, Where's the leave that doesn't come into any of these definitions? You know, how is it defined that you get sick leave that isn't sick leave if it's the result of an adverse event?
Unless you've thought of it ahead of time.
Yeah, You're at work, but you're not at work.
Which means that you anticipate adverse events.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so, I mean, talk about.
My brain's going crazy here. So if you're anticipating even a small number of adverse events, and then you're basically, I mean, through the nudging and setting this up, coercing your staff to do this, and are you telling your staff there's a possibility of an adverse event here? I wonder.
Oh, yes, but it's very rare. Very, very rare, remember.
Oh, so that's how it's sold. Very rare.
Yeah, very rare. But if it does, if you are unlucky enough for it to happen to you, then don't worry, because your caring, loving employer cares so much for you that they will generously allow you to have time off paid, and it won't affect your leave or your sick leave. How wonderful it is to work for these companies like Fonterra and Main Freight. How generous of them to do that for their staff, don't you think, Paul?
Aren't they nice? This just gets bigger and bigger and more spread out every time we talk and we, you know, start putting more pieces in the puzzle. So this was well thought out in advance. These meetings that took place, who do we know, obviously representatives of the company?
Yeah.
Do we know who in government were at these meetings?
Well, there were definitely people involved in that COVID vaccination
So Bloomfield, committee. He's there, is he?
It could have been, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we don't actually know those details. There's lots of follow-up OIAs that will come out of this, basically, this new insight that we've got. And, I mean, I'd love to know who the other 250 companies were that submitted an expression of interest in the scheme and how many others were involved and what the outcomes were, you know, and it has knock-on effects for the staff, so-called staff consultations that they had for each of these companies, you know, which was obviously fake. So, yeah, that was July, August 2021. So by December, a lot of the mandates obviously had been enacted and people the following year were sacked for not complying.
Yeah, so again, the question is, are these companies that are trusting the experts or authority figures, or is there something in it for them, or is it a mix of both? We kind of need to know. Don't we need to know now also how many people in these companies have had adverse reactions, are disabled, can't work, or have died? I want to know.
Yeah, and of course, the trouble that you've got with public-private partnerships is that a lot of the time, if you ask an Official Information Act request, it will be refused on the basis that it's commercially sensitive because it's, you know, they're talking about their profits. So it's out of reach, some of this information. I'm not sure we'll ever find out. But there are, you know, there are people out there who know. And
well,
I
if
would,
you're listening,
you know, very much welcome information on it.
If you're listening, it's weighing on your conscience. It's going to burn you up for the rest of your life unless you get it off your conscience. I hope you're listening.
Yeah.
Man. All right. Okay. So the whole thing was a setup, really, wasn't it, of coercion, persuasion. The parts were being put in place way before anyone realized.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was that month that happened, that was the time when all those thousands of doses of the Pfizer jab arrived in New Zealand, you know, and there was, you know, a big
push,
you know, fanfare about it. So I think some of it was definitely some people were thinking that they were doing the right thing and they were enthusiastic and carried along with the crowd, the groupthink. But there was definitely some evil intent there somewhere as well in trying to maximise profits.
Wasn't it at that time there was criticism of the politicians for not having enough vaccine and missing out on...
That's right, yes, yeah.
So that possibly provides a political...
That definitely comes into the psychology.
A political motive.
Yeah.
For going hard. Oh, they're rats. Oh, they are rats.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I wish I could be more kind.
Yeah, it's part of the psychology as well to actually say to the staff members, look, you know, we're privilege to be able to offer you this because of our significant corporate, you know, partnership with the government. And so, you know, there's limited stock of this very valuable injection. So, you know, get in while the going's good, while we've still got a stock of it. And, you know, how great is this opportunity for you? How special you are.
And
it's so unethical. It's, yeah, very troubling.
It's mind-blowing, actually. Is there any way this can be part of a phase two investigation, I guess, if people submit? Are you going to? With the information you've got?
More OAAs, yeah. I mean, definitely there will be follow-up OAAs to this. And as I say, if anybody else has got any other information, then, you know, definitely contact me and I'll be happy to follow that up. But, yeah, it's a giant jigsaw. And we do the best we can.
I just never thought this could ever happen here like this. It's like a...
Yeah.
It's worse than a bad dream. It's a freaking nightmare. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we get on to something else?
Yeah.
The Internet of Animals. What the hell is that?
Yeah, the Internet of Animals is part of the Agenda 2030. It's been talked about in the World Economic Forum's books, reports, etc. It's been mentioned by NASA, very much linked to satellite surveillance of various things. And, you know, really, the New Zealand, the whole, you know, predator-free 2050 nonsense is linked to this because, of course, a lot of the, you know, animals that we're supposedly trying to protect in New Zealand, you know, they're often fitted with these GPS trackers so that, you know, people can monitor where they are at any stage and that kind of thing. So this is sort of connected to that in terms of surveillance and monitoring. But I've written in my latest Substack about the recent technology in the last 5 years and how it's evolved in terms of the impact on farming and maximising output, especially in these, you know, mega farms where they haven't perhaps got the hands-on labour that they used to have in the smaller farms.
Yeah. So that involves tracking individual animals, knowing exactly where they are on the property.
Yeah.
What other information is available through that?
All kinds of information. So they'll be tracking things like the temperature and what the digestive system is doing, for instance, in the cow, what it's eating and how it's doing, whether it's fertile or not, whether it's just given birth. And also it has a facility on there, obviously, because of the GPS tracking, to prevent it. They use a geofencing facility, so they'll prevent it from going in a certain paddock without a physical fence being there. It will get to a certain point in a paddock and won't be able to go any further unless it has an electric shock or it starts with a nudge and a vibration. And then if it persists, it'll have an electric shock to prevent it from going to the greener grass.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Like the 15
minutes. That's God's
cities.
Creature right there. Yeah, yeah, for animals.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this it's a preempt to the 15-minute cities that Wellington's got to look forward to, perhaps.
Test it out on the animals first.
Yeah, exactly right.
The digital page.
Yeah.
I can see how the technology can be used to do the management of farming and all of that, but I don't know. It's what's the word? It's playing God. There's something so disrespectful to the creatures there.
That's right, yes. And also, of course, it's, you know, preventing the farmers from using their skills that they've inherited over generations, getting to know their animals, recognising certain signs. You know, it's a very hands-off kind of separate, dehumanising. You know, it's breaking down that relationship that we have with nature.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say before, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly benefits, and I'm not knocking that. I can see how farmers have had an incredibly difficult time, especially recently, trying to keep up with all the bureaucracy, et cetera. But this I see as another potential way that they're captured. You know, they have to, if they're going along these lines of subscribing to an app, because it can be on a monthly basis, because obviously farming is a roller coaster in terms of income and outgoings. And so if you're subscribing to a service where you're reliant heavily upon internet access and power source to manage your stock and the products, et cetera, and even the labor, then it potentially can, you know, if someone pulls the plug on that because you can't afford it one month, what happens then?
Well, it's about control ultimately. How could it not be in the end?
Yeah.
Where does that, because we just touched on that a moment ago with you mentioned of 15-minute cities. I mean, there's one thing controlling animals and using AI maybe to back that control up. But that can just as easily be transferred to any other living thing. And I'm thinking of human beings here, Ursula.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, you know, I started my article talking about the Fitbits that people wear, you know, and their smartwatches. I mean, you know, now you can't, if you buy a modern iPhone, you can't even get rid of the health app. It's stuck, you know, you can't delete it.
Yeah.
And that's because, you know, these people think that health information, all kinds of data about personal people, you know, personal health, it is incredibly valuable, you know, to accumulate, monitor, and to target people who might, you know, be susceptible to a particular intervention of some kind. So, yeah, all plays into the data collection and the data harvesting that the impact investors, you know, make mega profits out of.
And we're kind of the guinea pigs for it in a way.
Yeah.
What to do though?
Yeah. Well, you know, New Zealand quite often, technology-wise, New Zealand is quite often the first to...
Yeah, test bed.
You know, to try these out, yeah, because of our small population. So that might
and
be
compliant,
why.
Passive, compliant, non-complaining, yeah. And I'm so over that as a national characteristic. It's got us in all sorts of crap.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the Kiwis won't complain. Or just tell them it's good for them and they'll be happy with that. And as long as the rugby's on, everything's all right.
That's right. She'll be all right. Yeah.
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 I don't see a pushback, unfortunately.
No.
Not of a meaningful size, Ursula.
No, but maybe the farmers, you know, maybe some of the farmers will push back against this technology, do you think?
I don't know. You know, they've been struggling. Well, I suppose they've got a few runs on the board with water and stuff recently with this government. But, you know, I had Judith Collins on here. She's all in.
Yes, I heard that interview.
You know.
Very shallow. Very shallow. You know, they don't understand the deeper meanings. They very rarely, I find, read anything that, you know, is really important for them to read and understand in terms of what's going on in the wider world.
But you should be able to feel it. You know, I don't read much either. I mean, I talk to a lot of people and that maybe replaces that. But you can feel stuff that's not right.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Absolutely.
We're being told that, you know, we'll miss out and we'll be left behind. And it's always sold on convenience.
That's right. Yeah. And that it's inevitable. Yeah. I'm sure there's young farmers out there that will think this technology for their cows is, you know, is just the way inevitably that farming will go. But it's tragic how the skills will be lost. I mean, even the only reason really I got really interested in learning more about this was when I had some fencing work done at home, you know, and the fencing guy said to me, so many of his fencing colleagues have been made redundant because, you know, they haven't got any work anymore.
Because of the geofencing.
Virtual fencing.
Yeah.
Geofencing. And so those skills are lost, and it has a knock-on effect for the economy, that sort of thing as well, of course, with the, you know, the materials and the labour and everything else. So, yeah, it's...
And no one does business with anyone, you know, all that dissolves away and the relationships don't exist anymore. And
yeah, there's just something very sad. I mean, one of the things I do as a teacher is try to encourage students, adult students, to get off their phones, you know, and raise awareness of the addiction that people have to the technology. And there's something incredibly tragic about looking into a piece of farmland and looking at a farmer staring at his phone. You know,
yeah.
That's
yeah, when you've got the whole vista of nature in front of you.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of symbolic of the era that we're living in, especially in New Zealand when we're surrounded by all this lovely, you know, landscape, beautiful landscape. But anyway,
oh well,
we need to end on a positive note, don't we, Paul?
Do you have one? Do we have one? Well, here's the positive note. If I'm not going to buy these products if I know it's like that. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. I'd much rather give them up.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. So the processed milk that comes out of these dairy farms, that's something that people could boycott definitely as a, you know, as a protest. Yeah. Stick to the
I mean, I don't even know if I want to go to the warehouse ever again.
No.
Now.
I haven't, personally, since well, now they that I know that, became Nazis. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, those main companies, Fonterra, Main Freight, Fisher & Paykel, and the Warehouse Group, they were the four main ones that we knew about. But there are others, yeah, that participated in that partnership. Yeah.
Well, that's great work, Ursula. Blood pressure
Thanks,
machine
Paul.
Required again. Hawthorne Berry Supply.
Yeah.
Needs a top up. So you haven't finished here. You're going to keep drilling, right? With the OIAs.
Yeah, we never give up. Yeah, never give up.
And if anyone is listening and has a story, they can get in touch with us, 2057 inbox at realitycheck.radio. We'll be confidential about that. But can they get in touch with you through the Substack or
Absolutely.
Somewhere like that?
Yes. Yeah, on my Substack, there's my website and my email address. So informedheart.substack.com is where I blog most of my research because I was banned from LinkedIn and all the other platforms. So that's where all my research generally goes at the moment.
Yeah. And I see Bloomfield, if I'm to believe the posts I've seen, is now promoting mindfulness.
Oh, is he? I haven't seen that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Boy, they love rubbing
it. What kind of mindfulness?
Well, I don't know, whatever that means. Yeah, what kind? There's all sorts of kinds of it, I guess, but they love rubbing it, your face in it, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way I feel. Anyway, okay, Ursula, great to catch up again. Thanks for the work you do.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that.
And let's see if anything comes in. And if anything comes in, let's find out about that and see where it can go, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057, that's 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.